Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Big Squid Podcast, and today it is part two of our latest episode of Space Podyssey. Join Rove McManus and me, Justin Hamilton, as we continue our look at the classic Steven Spielberg movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Before you begin this podcast, remember this is part two of our Close Encounters chat, so make sure you listen to part one first. Maybe you could go the full memento and listen to it all out of order. Like, I wouldn't recommend it. It hasn't been designed to be done that way, but, you know, you do you. That's what I reckon. Quick reminder as well, if you're living in Sydney, don't forget that my solo show, Little Victories, is appearing at the Sydney Comedy Store next week, the 28th of October. And as a listener, you score a cheaper ticket by using the promo code podcast. All right, I'll swing by at the end to let you know what is coming up over the next couple of weeks. But let's bring in Rove and reacquaint ourselves with Roy as he attempts to discover the secrets and the truth as we return to Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Have you recently had a close encounter? A close encounter with something very unusual. Who are you people?
We are back for the second part
of
our Close Encounters deep dive. And we were just talking before we restarted. I totally agree with you. If aliens landed, I just feel like 75% of the world would be like, yeah, whatevs, no big oops.
Yeah, I think we've lost a bit of our imagination. I feel like as a species, we have just decided that everything there is to know, we know it already.
Right.
Like even I get excited. It has happened multiple times in the last, I'm going to say, 12 months. I think there have been three new species of octopus,
right,
that have been discovered. There was an amazing piece of footage that at the time of recording was maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, where a jellyfish was spotted.
Yes.
That they think is like one of the only kind that there's only one other type of jellyfish that it could be.
Yeah.
And they thought that one was extinct.
Yeah.
So if it is that, that's incredible on its own merits.
Yeah.
If not, it's a new species of jellyfish.
Yeah.
And I was talking about it to people and everyone's just like,
What?
They only cared when I showed them a picture and they went, oh, that looks pretty.
Right.
But it just...
Yeah.
We don't even know what's in the oceans, let alone what's flying around out there.
Right.
But we seem to have this idea of, well, we do know. And if we don't know, someone will tell me.
Right, right.
It's but like, is it not? Are you not inquisitive? No, not really.
Yeah,
it's I haven't watched all of Better Call Saul yet. I just need.
Yeah,
to...
I definitely have. But the you know, it's the footage from Mars. And it's, ah, yeah, looks like South Australia.
Or, oh, haven't we already been there?
It's like, oh.
Oh, I thought we were up to Jupiter by now. Are we only at Mars? Ugh.
Yeah, it's just a downer, isn't
it? Yeah. It's like we don't have that wonderfully inquisitive nature anymore. And it's very sad. Very, very sad.
Yeah.
That's like my daughter is very much into the idea of aliens and ghosts at the moment.
Right.
And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Are her friends into it?
She has got her friends into it because she's now of the belief that we do have a ghost in our house.
Right.
Because she felt the cold wind that may have just been a draft.
Right.
As it is cold.
Right.
But as I keep saying to her, well, I don't know. I can't say for sure.
Right.
I don't know.
Is she freaked out?
No.
That's interesting.
That was the best part of it. I did have a thought of, well, how does that make you feel?
Right.
That, you know, if it was to be a ghost. And she's like, no, it's fine. Because then she said, well, how did she put it? Well, how do you feel about the idea that we might have a paranormal, I want to say entity, it might not have been entity, but certainly a paranormal visitor to the house? I was like, well, I think that's cool because I've always wanted to see a ghost and I never have. So then she's like, well, I'll introduce you. But if I was just like, no, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. Same thing as like to say when she's like, have you seen a UFO? I don't turn around and go, well, no, because quite clearly if there were UFOs, we would know by now.
Right.
And just because you're with a child and maybe you feel you need to somewhat cushion the blow of their imagination being ruined.
Yeah.
I would make the counterpoint of, to ruin what?
Right.
Well, because they don't exist. Says who?
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
Have you even traveled outside your own state or country or hemisphere?
Don't right.
Tell me what happens in other parts of the universe.
Are you going to say that someone from Reykjavik doesn't exist because you haven't met one?
Well, exactly, right? Yeah. Who's to say?
Yeah. It's so interesting. It's I kind of wonder
what... in a world where there are reporters in Russia being taken off air and put in jail...
Right.
For trying to hold up a sign saying, this is what's actually happening.
Right.
This is what we as a country are actually doing.
Yeah.
So if you're telling me that, everything is being fed to us. We know everything that's going on. Everybody is fully aware because, well, I've read it. I've read it and it says, no, there is no such thing. Who's to say?
Yeah.
And it's a shame. It's a shame that we don't have that thought of... Well, it could be.
And wanting to engage as well.
Why like, not? Yeah, there's no harm in it.
Well, Roy and Gillian.
I mean, there is if you're making a giant mound of, you know, your garden in the middle of the house.
Roy. Come on, Roy.
That looks like Ayers Rock. Maybe that's a problem.
And, you know, your hot wife wants to make out with you. Just make out with her, mate.
And look, I will say this, that was a lot of mashed potato for a family of four.
Right.
I don't want to throw stones, but I was like, you're setting the man up.
Yeah.
You don't. two of those kids, one of the kids only eight. The other one has to be much younger than that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of mashed potatoes. That's a lot of carb load.
Yeah. It's a very different time. Very different time.
That's very true.
Roy and Gillian making their way to the mountain that's all pretty thrilling stuff. They get away from the military pretty easily.
Yeah, military. I don't even know what they're doing.
They're
apparently
useless. They're too busy coming up with toxic waste dumps to worry about actual...
We got cows to gas. What are you talking about?
Yeah, we don't have time for this. Hey, does the third guy that's with him, does he die on the mountain or is he just knocked out?
No, I think I took it as we just needed to show that other characters were willing to breathe the air and make the journey.
Yeah.
But we don't want...
We don't want
bridge playing Nana on the way. We just want it to be these two characters... But it wouldn't be believable for them to be the only two that were willing to make that journey.
So
then we needed to get rid of him pretty quickly.
Yeah, because it's a tough beat if he gets murdered. He just gets knocked out and then he wakes up.
We only just learned his name too. That's what I was like, maybe he'll get through. Ooh, no.
No. Tough beat because he wakes up and he's missed all of it.
He's missed all of
it. He slept through it.
Yeah.
Like, I hope
he's probably woken up half sunburned and no idea why.
I hope that he woke up halfway through. And at least saw the ship taking off or something.
Well, there was obviously no security screening. You didn't need a lanyard
no.
to get into that. Yeah, if you just wandered in, if you were a farmer escaping your gassed cattle,
yeah,
and just happened to wander in at that point when it's suddenly become the least secretive location anywhere,
yeah,
because giant orbs are coming out of the sky. Then apparently you can just rock up there. It won't matter. So, yeah, he would have been there. He would have been fine. He would have been fine.
Do you love the UFOs? Like,
they're exquisite.
I love all the different sizes.
I love the fact that there's always that comical little one at the end. Yes. It's just like the baby one that's kind of catching up.
That's such a Spielberg UFO, isn't it?
It is.
It's such a, just a little,
that
just little
the first sort
one.
Of flybys they come around. I love that he decided they will all look different.
Yep.
And whether that was a ranking thing or just like, well, why would they all be uniform?
Yeah.
But then, of course, there's the one last little one that comes through. Was rescued. That's why even, you know, I think you pick early that it's helicopters that second time round.
Right.
It's just the white lights. Which also, by the way, what a dick move.
Yeah.
From the helicopter just to come that close. Like, people are parked on a hill.
Yeah.
They're not doing anything wrong.
Yeah, just leave them.
You know, let Bridge Nana finish her game.
My poor Bridge Nana. The government's obviously freaking out and not knowing how to deal with any of it. I tell you
what,
though,
she didn't get gassed.
She probably would have been up for it.
That's very true.
That when the big mothership comes along, I'd forgotten how much bigger it is than everything else. Like the choice of size of it is fantastic,
and the amount of planning that's gone into what do we think it would look like?
Yeah,
because I think even back then, 77, the idea that it's flying saucers, they're silver, they're sleek.
Yeah,
they would look like they would be like a disc, even if it has a top on it. That's what it would be.
Yeah.
This idea that they would be, you know, even as it takes off at the very, very end, you see what looks like the equivalent of a city.
Yeah.
Perched on top.
Yeah.
To give you some idea of the scale of this thing. It's like the size of a moon or something. But just all the arms that are sticking out of it, the different coloured lights. It's beautifully done. Really beautifully done.
Yeah, the design is fantastic.
Which I have just freshly come from watching the Light and Magic, the ILM documentary series on Disney.
Oh, okay.
Where these effects came from.
Right.
And you just see how they made all these sorts of things with old model kits and stuff.
Right.
The amount of detail that they put into it by hand.
Yeah.
This is all pre-CG. They would physically make them and then film them in a way where they superimpose them. That's why a lot of this I was mindful of. Yeah, this isn't the day where you would type in a bunch of numbers into a computer.
Right.
And that's not to be dismissive in any way, shape or form.
No, no.
How it's done nowadays.
Yeah.
But there really was a creative solution to a problem that was put forward of, we want flying saucers on screen.
Yeah.
How do we do that? Okay, it's not, well, how much money have you got to spend on graphics?
Right.
It's, we're going to have to think of how we do that. And I'm very mindful of that when I watch this.
Yeah. Man, it does have a weight
beautiful.
To it.
Yeah, right.
Have a little side note, have you seen Nope?
Not yet. At time of recording, when this goes out, yes.
Yeah.
But Nope.
Okay. I'll just
stop
leave
talking.
It there. We'll save this conversation for another time. How do you feel about the musical notes?
Oh, space jazz.
That's what I was. that's what I'd written it down as well. How good is space jazz?
I like the fact that it's the whole way through. It's clarinet. We're hearing what seems to be beautiful clarinet or oboe or something.
Yeah,
and then in comes the mothership with just huge pounding tuba.
Yeah, yeah. This is how you play it.
Yeah.
It's an
interesting choice, but I love the idea that if aliens were to communicate with us, because that's the other part of this. This isn't from a book. It's not from an existing concept.
Right.
It's Spielberg's, it's written and directed by him.
Yeah.
So it's that idea of sitting down and thinking, if aliens were to try to communicate with humans, how would they do it? And to think lights and music is beautiful. I love that.
There's something. It's just such a positive movie. Like even, when that big mothership turns up, apart from the one person who runs into the portaloo, which is such a
noted. I did appreciate that because we needed to see that.
Yes,
because even before it started, there's a shot of the guys at the very, very back, not the ones with the keyboard, but like the guys who are running all the machinery. And there's a really nice shot where you're following this one character in a lab coat.
Yeah.
Walking through, and it's a sort of like a dolly shot as he kind of comes through, and then it's more like a steady cam, really, because he travels around and just ends up back where he started. But in doing so, they're showing you, look at all the equipment.
Yes.
And he's just really chill. He's just like, all right, you guys, you're switched on. Okay, we're getting good, decent readings off that. And I'm like, mate, you're preparing for the first contact of alien life.
Yeah.
And everyone seems pretty like, okay, are we all set? Like we're about to put on a school play.
Right. Yeah. It's a rock and roller Stedford with
but
a
I
big budget.
But I get that we need to build to the, we can't be, wow, alien. Like, yeah. Wow, aliens might turn up. Wow, aliens do turn up. All caps, wow.
Yeah.
Big mothership. I get in the moment, I had my first instinct was, dude, could you not have played that a bit better?
Right.
Before realizing, oh no, we need somewhere to build. Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, that mothership was, it is impressive. And at no point, even though I know where it's headed, at no point do I feel that the movie is wanting you to think, oh, they're all just going to get gunned down or something.
No, like no. The whole vibe is, how amazing is this? That's the whole vibe of, you know, like we've seen all the stresses and the...
Sure, we've gone through have abducted a child.
Well, yeah.
At this point. However, at no point do you sit there thinking this is all going to end horribly.
Right. Yeah, it's such a fascinating choice. Well, you know, like when they made 2001 A Space Odyssey, it was how do you depict an alien sort of intelligence? And the way they did it was to put, you know, Bowman in the... like it was almost like a zoo. And then they just... And it's just trying to recreate like you would for an animal. You know, its habitat. And then it's just these brutal cuts of him just kind of like, hang on, that's me over there. Fuck, I'm 68. Oh, fuck, I'm 98, you know. And but it's all kind of ethereal because they've kind of figured to try and show anything would reduce it. So so this feels like a big swing. And to it's easy to mock the space jazz because it's such a swing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so it, like, the things that are easy to mock are the things that take a risk, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work.
No. And again, that iconic tune that has now become almost a trope and a cliche that can be mocked and milked for comedic value.
Yeah.
It just really suits. I don't know. There's just something about that idea of just picking a bunch of notes.
Yeah.
Even though the guy who's not playing, but there's like there's another, you know, senior official whose job it is to relay the notes back to HQ or something.
Yeah.
So, but he's got this really strong southern drawl.
Right.
So he suddenly is like, okay, drop down to a major fifth. I need a semi-demiquaver, and then can we go up an octave? Okay, great. It just took me out of it for a moment.
Yeah.
It was just like, whoa, okay, right.
Yeah.
And then even the guy who's just trying to rock out on the keyboard.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we got it from here.
Yeah.
And they take it up the back on the machines, and it just becomes a pianola. That was rough.
Rough for him. Bullshit. Yeah. Like that guy was about
that's what space jazz is all about. You just meant to feel it, and they go, no, we'll do it electronically.
That guy might have, like, bridged a gap.
They were predicting the future. It's all just going to go electronic anyway, mate. Just step aside. The computer's got this. You're fucking up the algorithm. What are you doing?
Mate, I love it so much. I love the return of the pilots, the sailors, even some animals.
Was that... that dog took a tumble going down that ramp. That dog had not prepared for that slide. Was that a deleted scene that was put back in? Because I don't remember that.
That was in. Yep, that's in the
original. That was
always
in?
Yep.
Because that's one of the toughest moments to reconcile is that, okay, so these pilots have come back.
Yeah.
But they're of an age where their families would still be alive and everybody...
Some of them,
Yeah. There would be, feasibly, members of their families that, you know, maybe it's even if they had a kid or something at the time or a loved one. But the idea that it's, you know, they're not so old that everyone they know is gone, that suddenly is like, wow, how do you put them back into the world?
Right. Well, they can definitely fly their planes because they're in.
Gassed. They right. absolutely get gassed with the sheep.
We don't have time to deal with that.
Fed some happy gas. And then, more importantly, then what happens with the new recruits that are going on?
Right.
Which is a wonderful idea.
Yeah, student exchange program. That's what that is right there.
Exactly it. But also just the one dog, apparently.
Yeah.
That's all they needed. Who knows how much probing that dog had done to it, but I'm sure it was probably less than it had at the vets on a regular basis. Right. Probably like, is that the best you got?
It's such a...
This is not my first probing rodeo.
Like, it's kind of a beautiful ending and it opens up so many more questions, which we can get into in a sec about...
But it's like, obviously, you take it that Little Barry's the most recent abductee.
Right.
And then our pilots are probably the oldest, and then we've got a bunch of other people in between, one of which is a chef who didn't bother to take his apron off for however long he's been there.
Yeah.
This guy coming out with an apron on.
Yeah, he's been cooking.
Yeah. He could technically be your third encounter. You go on there and he's like made you a meal.
Yeah.
But it does have you guys. So their reason for taking everybody, have they now decided we've worked everything out that we need to work out and so we can put them back in?
We know how to communicate with you. Yeah. Is that what
and
it is?
And for those going on board, again, you have no concerns for their well-being.
No concerns whatsoever.
You're not sitting
whatsoever.
There going, what are you doing? Don't take this job.
Yeah. And it's such a specific vibe that Spielberg is going for. Also, fascinating from a storytelling perspective that we have followed Roy for this whole story. And then it's a very passive ending for Roy because he literally just stands there with everyone else and watches.
Yeah, although he is singled out by the little greys.
Yeah, but it's still, it's a very...
Oh, sure. He doesn't get to be, oh, no, we were talking to you the whole time.
Yeah.
He is just...
He's just there.
Yeah, he acts as an indicator of what has been happening across the board with a whole bunch of different people.
Yeah, and then he's allowed to go with them.
Yeah.
So...
But there's nothing... Yeah, I guess that's a good point. There's nothing at that point that makes him any more special from any of the other people.
Yeah, he got up the mountain.
Except that Lecomte? The French scientist.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Although that was a great line of, I want to speak to whoever's in charge.
Yeah.
He's in charge. Well, he can't be. He's not American.
Right.
A wonderful
great.
Line.
Yeah.
And I'm sure delivered with all the tongue in all the cheek.
Yes, yeah.
But there's still nothing apart from, again, he is one example of there's something in all of these people who are drawing this same image and hearing this same set of notes. That there is more to this than we know.
Right.
But nothing that says, but this guy in particular.
Yeah.
Except
he's our guy.
Except he's the one who's like, I'm going to take my mask off.
Yeah, fuck it. I'll be right. There's nothing to worry about. It's a fascinating ending. And Spielberg has said in subsequent interviews that he wrote this before he had kids. That was 1977, so I wrote that blithely, and today I would never have the guy leaving his family and going on the mothership. But I think it's in keeping with Roy's character. Of course he'd go. If he didn't go, then he would be a different character. So in 1977, I reckon Lucas and Spielberg got it right. Han shoots first, Roy fucks off.
Yes!
That's the characters.
Yeah, I at no point think... Oh, his family needs him.
Yeah.
Because at that point, he's been made out to be a bit of a lovable schlub.
Yeah.
But he otherwise has kind of, he's burnt a ton of bridges.
Oh, yeah. No one's talking to him in that suburb, especially the woman who owned the street geese.
Exactly. They're going to be breaking in. Any person who has had their house broken into by the street geese or their car tires stolen are not going to be wanting him around.
That's my spin-off show. That's the one I want to see, the street geese.
It's not too late, Spielberg. There's still time. Yes. So
street
for him, like,
and
it's
space
like,
jazz.
What has he got to go back to? And he has seen that, well, you can go and come back. The only hilarious part of it is that he could have this incredible experience and he too comes back, same as these pilots. And who knows, maybe there's a way that he could come back and no time has passed
yeah.
for anyone he has left behind.
Yeah.
However, he's coming back to go, guess what happened to me?
Yeah.
And once again, they're like, oh, Dad and his mashed potatoes again.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, we're going to go for a drive up into the mountains and fuck. See Bridge Nana and the, yeah. you know, abductee hillbillies. Who
fucking
knows?
Hide the carbs. Dad's gone fucking full close you know, encounters
oh,
again.
God, how much have we got those flowers bedded into the garden beds because he's going to go digging.
Oh, man.
We only just got those geese back into that cage.
This is a disaster. You know, so I'm not into sequels for classic films, but I want one for this. After rewatching it.
See, but I feel E.T. was the sequel to this.
Well,
I feel E.T. was the next sort of stage of, well, then what happens if one of them gets left behind?
Well, yeah, yeah.
And it's I almost directly wanted to watch E.T. to go. I'm pretty sure it's the exact same spaceship.
Right. Oh, it's
in design.
Yeah, there's a similarity to it. It feels like E.T. ship would fit in somewhere into the
mothership. If you wanted to make it or not, it's like a similar sort of fit out.
Yeah, yeah. But I want to know about the people being chosen to go into space with the aliens. I want to know how the cover-up, what happened with that. How much information did they share with the other superpowers? That's what I want to know. Also in the sequel, I'd have the UFO return everybody with knowledge and skills to fix the world. And because it's so many years later, nobody will listen to them and go out of their way to silence them. Like you could have, do you know what I mean? Like you could have you know, corporations know how to fix things.
Yes.
They just don't want to fix things. And then these people come back and go, well, we can do this, 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 and this. And then it's like, you know, Big Oil is making sure that they're taking out these people who have had these wonderful experiences and have come back full of a way to fix everything. Like, I think you could, maybe a TV series.
You get a few seasons out. I would accept a TV series.
Yeah.
I don't think we needed an Encounters of the Fourth Kind.
No.
But yeah, I'm more accepting of a spin-off TV series.
Yeah. And I'd be into it. Bring back Roy.
How did you feel about the kiss with Gillian that was on the actual lips before he left?
He's fucking moved on. He has
in for a penny and for a pound at that point.
You know, she looks a little. You know what? This is you kind of look like my wife, but you believe in the shit I believe in.
Oh, and a very less than subtle. Oh, I only got burnt on half my face. You look like you got burnt over your whole body, and she's like, "Yes," as she kind of exposes herself.
Yeah.
And I'm not victim shaming. I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of early flirtatiousness going on.
Roy's a dog. Like, his family's fine without
him. That's
true. I think the aliens look pretty effective as well.
They look great.
Yeah.
Quite
clearly, you know, probably some kids in there.
Very definitely kids in suits.
That's all right.
And then the one that's doing the musical notes that...
Yeah.
I remember being taught that at school, So Far Mi Re Do was always done with like a do was a fist and then you'd work your way up. So all those hand signals took me back. I was like, that's right. We were taught that at school.
Yeah.
The alien, you know, you're not trying to make something that looks human-like.
Yeah.
So that works very well. The first one that comes out with the very long gangly arms and legs.
Oh, yeah.
It was probably the most confronting thing.
Yeah.
And that when the little ones come out, I don't know, I was expecting them to have the classic grey alien sort of big black eyes.
Yeah.
They have more like big goldfish eyes.
Yeah.
Which I found more confronting.
Yeah, because you're not expecting them.
No, not at all.
This is going to be a very specific reference for anyone who has watched the final Ziggy Stardust film clip, but there is a point where I think Bowie is about to sing Changes, and if you look into the audience, you see a woman in the audience who puts her arms out, and I'm like, wait a minute, is she the one who plays that big gangly alien at the end of Close Encounters? Anyway, a very specific reference, and if anyone remembers what I'm talking about,
Go find it.
Go and find it. Take a screen grab. Send it through. Send it through. But, it's a, you know, like I'm even interested as to know why, how did they know that they'd want to take some other people on board with them? Like,
yeah, that seems to be an assumption on our part.
Right.
Whether it's because, well, we found the planes, but all those pilots had gone.
Right.
Which suggests that they had... wanted to take these people. Because initially you're thinking, oh, they're going to try to ambush them. It's going to be an inside job and maybe they're all sent, you know, as Donnie Darko, not Donnie Darko, Donnie Brasco style. They're going to go infiltrate from the inside.
Oh, yeah.
Go deep undercover type of thing.
Yep.
We still don't really know their motivations.
Right.
But again, it's nice to see that the despite all the cover-ups and the gassing of livestock, that the military in this have seemingly altruistic intentions of we just want to reach out across the divide to this higher intelligence that has come all this way, rather than we don't trust them, something we need to get them before they get us type of attitude, which is a very common narrative choice. So I really liked that idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, no one sort of really checked with the aliens. No one really seemed to care to ask any questions of the people who had been getting these visions.
Right.
Have you been told anything else? How are they communicating with any kind of other language?
Maybe that UFO takes off and they go, right, we've sent all these psychic vibes out to you guys, Richard Dreyfuss, that's good. And hang on, who are you guys in the red jumpsuits? And like, oh no, we weren't getting psychic vibes. It's like, oh fuck, you sent us the wrong people.
You're not what we need at all.
It's those old people in the helicopter that you flew off.
But apparently he's fully vaxxed.
Fully vaxxed, yeah. that is the nice thing.
Apparently they needed to know what his blood type was. I don't know how that's going to come up.
No.
I don't think you need to give a transfusion to an alien on board that ship. I don't think you're going to help.
I guess this is one of those movies that gives Spielberg the saccharine, you know, when people say he's a bit too saccharine, and it's like, I guess it's because this movie is essentially optimistic. But you know what? 2022 has been a fucking tough year. I'm right in the mood for this.
I thought it was pitch perfect.
Yeah.
I thought it really walked the line of being something that, within reason, is a good kids movie.
Yeah.
Like, I do watch a lot of things now through the prism of, okay, could I watch this with my daughter?
Yeah.
Like I was watching the Ghostbusters Afterlife movie.
Oh, thinking,
I think she'd really dig this because there's kids in it now.
Yeah.
Until you see all the little marshmallow men completely destroying each other on blenders, and that got a bit graphic.
Right.
I went, oh no, there's actually some elements of this that are quite dark. But apart from...
How old is she now?
She's 8 and a bit.
And she's a mature 8 and a bit.
Yeah, but the idea of it's just people having these alien experiences and encounters, and then at the end, that final scene, only when Barry goes missing is there any point where it seems quite scary.
Yeah.
But even in that point, I could, you know, if I was to be saying to her, he comes back, it's okay, which is all she needs to know.
Yeah.
Like that whole ending is like, she would be so enamored with the idea that, so if aliens did come down, they could take people. Yeah. And I just know it would open the floodgates to her asking all these questions of, well, would you go and what do you think happens? And what do you think happens to those people and when they come back? And that would be amazing. And the idea of this little kid, she's a little kid, slightly older than him, but the idea of, well, he went on there just for a couple of days and he just did a little weekender.
Yeah.
That's like a school camp.
Yeah.
You know, and he's sad that they're leaving. And it's, in many respects, it's not as sad as E.T.
Oh, yeah, and E.T.'s
E.T., you got to be ready for E.T.
Jesus Christ.
As you and Ben well know.
Yeah.
So this idea that... it's not... I don't feel it's as kidsy as E.T. or Goonies or even Indiana Jones in a way. This is... You know, it's still got... You can see how it was late 70s, but still that 70s film. It's still got a bit of that to it. That it's maybe not, you know, it's not Schindler's List, but I don't think it's a dismissive saccharine kids flick.
Yeah. No, I don't either.
And, it's broad, but that's harder to pull off than people think when they use it as a slander.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's quite euphoric.
So the guy who's done very well from being broad for a long time.
Yeah. If you could all do it.
Can't all win theatre sports medals.
Yeah, absolutely. You remember that, everybody. But, you know, it's even the way the credits start playing, but you still spend time observing.
You're following the ship out. It's lovely, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Would you go?
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking oath I would.
Look. I mean, I say yes, since that was like knee-jerk reaction. I would want to do the, can I just go for a, I don't know how you communicate. I don't want the full Contiki experience.
Yeah.
I just want.
You just want to go out into the harbour.
Yeah. I just want a day trip, just a little cruise.
Yeah.
You know, like doing a wine tour or something. Just, I'll be back at my end of day. Having said that, my least favourite thing in the world is going on any kind of craft.
Right.
Particularly watercraft.
Right.
Like if someone says we're doing a like a day cruise.
Yeah.
Or it's a party, but it's on a boat.
No, yeah. Fuck that.
Can't get there late, can't leave early.
Yeah.
Plus you're five planets away.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to rethink my answer.
Right. Suddenly you turned around.
Maybe we'll just stay home and watch the wonderful Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a half century.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fine. I'll go as long as they give me superpowers so when I return I can save everyone.
Do you think everybody got probed?
I just don't think in this film anyone got probed.
No, it's a probeless film. I think other movies have been. It's a probeless film.
Yeah, it's a probeless film. I reckon everyone is airtight back there.
Everyone's good to go.
Everyone's good to go. There's nothing to worry about.
No leaky balloons. Everybody's fine. Good.
No. It's all good. It's super tight.
Yeah. Apron Chef is not walking down that gangplank with a...
Yeah.
It's all good.
It's all good. All right. Segment Who and How. Which character do you think you would be and how would you react in their place? I've already answered this. I'd be Roy and I would fuck off. I'd be gone.
I'd be happy to...
You don't have to worry, though. I'd still podcast.
Thank God for that, right? I would be... I know you would, too. You'd have some great stuff. Yeah. My gosh. I think you'd be a great ambassador for our planet. I would be... There's a guy who is in a lot of the back... He's just a background player.
Yeah.
But he's very obvious.
Yeah.
In that he's just... a bald guy in a lab coat, and he's one of the first to put on his sunnies, the aviators.
Oh yeah,
but he's just been put in the right, and he's just a very distinctive look, quite a thick neck.
Yeah,
just you know, not what you'd say were Hollywood good looks, but he's there in a lot of the background shots where I just went, I'm sure you're still alive. And you can point to yourself on more than one occasion. You are next to very important people for a lot of this film. I would like to be that guy where you're front and center. You could just turn and go, whatever's happening, it's happening to the guy next to me.
Right.
And I'm just action adjacent.
Yeah.
So if anything does go awry.
Yeah.
I'm not the guy playing the keyboard.
Yeah.
In case they go, whoa.
Hey.
What was that? I know we're playing the notes between the notes. What the fuck was that?
Yeah. You don't want that
and
pressure.
And zap your dust.
Yeah.
So I would want to be that guy.
I like it.
I don't know who he was. And then at the last minute, by the way, in one final shot, what I thought was Lance Henriksen.
Right.
Before his entire face knew how to frown.
Oh, yeah, it was Lance Henriksen.
And then in the credits, he's there, but I don't remember seeing his character anywhere earlier in the film.
Right.
Anyway.
I saw his name as well, but I don't remember seeing him.
He's... When everyone's reacting to the ship right at the end as it takes off, you see him very clearly.
Right.
But at that point, I went, is that him?
Right.
Like him, a younger, you know.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah.
Not like the from the movie Aliens version of him.
Right.
And then, he gets a very clear credit, but I don't remember him as any other character than that.
Than that, right.
So I feel maybe he got cut. Anyway, I would just want to be one of the many people that were just randomly on that tarmac.
So you can be...
Or the owner of the dog, because how great would that be?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I have openly wept watching YouTube clips, supercuts of people who thought they'd lost their dog and then found them again.
Oh, like, I can't. It's too much. It's honestly too much.
Oh, well, I've there's the one of the kids them. Who... I clicked on one thinking it was a news story. It was like a supercut of like, no. And the one where the kids come out the back going... to the mum, they just see movement in the back of the station wagon.
Yeah.
And they say to the mum, you bought a new dog? Like, how could you?
Yeah.
But then realize it's their dog that went missing 3 months before.
So I got really upset when I follow on YouTube, on Instagram, Molly and Peggy. Do you know them?
No, I don't.
So
maybe it's for the best.
Maybe it is. So Molly is a Staffy. She's had a pup called Ruby.
Yep.
And Peggy is a magpie who got injured, who now lives with them. And at one point they had to move house. And I was like, oh, what are they going to do? Anyway, they've moved house and they're all still together and it's all fine.
Thank God. Okay.
But they're all good pals. And the magpies learned how to bark.
That could be tough for you because if you take off with the aliens to come back and not know what's happened to Molly and Peggy, could be rough for you.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely stay in touch with them. Like, I'll still follow them.
You'd get great service up there.
I'll check the Wi-Fi before I say yes.
If you are telling me that aliens can cross the galaxy to get here but don't have decent Wi-Fi, you're a joke.
Yeah. There's two things I need to do. I still need to keep the podcast up. Mm-hmm. I've got a Patreon and I don't want to let anyone down. And I want to keep up with Molly and Peggy.
Life sorted.
Segment, zero charisma. Who do you think has zero charisma in this? I think it's the guy who claims he saw Bigfoot. I think he's a shithead.
His thuggish kids didn't enamor me.
Oh, yeah. That whole family, right?
Yeah, yeah. The kids, like, you know, they had one had hands on hips and then the daughter was, like, crossing her arms like a nightclub bouncer. I didn't connect with them at all.
Yeah. Segment, better or worse, ruin or improve the movie with one decision. I've got an improve and improve with a question mark, and I've got a ruin with a question mark. But do you have anything, or do you want to go
to improve the film?
Yeah,
on a rewatch, I feel we got too much of the aliens.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like more of a hint, like you see that initial shot where it's really heavily backlit, and you just see a lot of silhouetted, Funko Pops, bobbleheading everywhere.
Yeah,
was kind of all we needed. I think the hero shot of I'm going to give you the hand signals and do a... like I've seen creepier smiles from people.
Right.
But the alien smiling felt to me like, oh, we've kind of ruined the magic.
Just a little bit?
Yeah.
After all that time of holding back?
Yeah, it was kind of a nice little tease. And then, whoa, that's tongue. What was that about? I thought we were just taking it easy here.
So this is so I suggest this as an improvement with a question mark. At the end, when the aliens are revealed, I would have the military leap out and shoot all the aliens. Then while Roy and the civilians are in shock, the army rounds them up and plug their brains into the ship so they can fly. Obviously, they have psychic connections revealed through the music in the mountains, so now they use them to fly through the universe. And then in the next two films, we see the US Army killing every alien civilization in the rest of the universe, not being able to deal with it because they don't have weapons, just music and love.
That's the whole sequel.
That's another two.
I wouldn't have minded one line.
Yeah,
as well, you know, almost if in a modern day post credit scene.
Yeah,
you watch the ship, you know, from different angles, flying off into the outer reaches of space with everyone's names coming up.
Yeah,
and then right at the very end, you cut back to everyone on the tarmac going, should we have got something from them?
Yeah,
because you do go away just going, so what we can.
Yeah.
Wait for them to call us again?
Yeah. Did anyone get a return call
Did we get their number? Did
Because
they're not technically not following us back.
Yeah.
They DM'd us, but they haven't followed us back.
Yeah.
So it's like saying like, oh, you know. I was messaging so-and-so the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, did you give them a call? No, I just...
Yeah.
I commented on their post and they liked it. That's essentially what the humans did in this movie.
Yeah.
They went nice space jazz and the aliens liked it and they just went, they didn't get much out of it. Well, we didn't get anything in return other than you picked the right music notes. Well done. Now we'll take a handful of your population.
Yeah.
You can have your dog back. You're welcome.
Yeah.
But it's up to us whether we choose to return.
And now with that in mind, you know how George Lucas went and added CGI to the Star Wars?
Yes.
I would go back and for the space jazz pianist, I'd take him out and I'd drop in Kenny G. Imagine Kenny G. This movie would be
that
like 15
would
times better.
Be so much better.
Yeah.
Oh, more than 15.
Yeah.
He brings at least 20 on a bad day.
Have you watched the Kenny G doco?
Why is there a Kenny G doco?
There's a Kenny G doco.
Right.
It's magnificent.
Okay.
He's fucking great. He is so fun and he is across everything.
I have no doubt that Kenny G gets it.
You have to watch it.
I know he gets
it. It's genuinely great. Like it's by the Ringer. It's a Ringer documentary.
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's it called? Looking for the G-spot? It's got to be that. He's a walking gag waiting to happen.
He's really funny. Hang on, I'm looking it up. I wish it was looking for the G spot. What's it called? It's just called Listening to Kenny G, I think. But Looking for the G spot would have been so much better.
Very disappointing.
HBO's Listening
what's
to
an
Kenny
HBO?
G.
It'll be gritty.
A portrait of one of the most beloved and reviled figures in jazz. When you watch it, like they even have like experts on talking about how he ruined jazz and all that. And
well, but he's come out the other side. He's done a good job of everyone just this is just repulsive.
Yeah, and he's endured it. And yes. he's a delight.
And no one else has dared to step up and swipe that crown. No one else has come through and said, I will be the new king of easy listening.
Yes.
With my tennis sacks or whatever it might be. Man,
that is still my dream job, is to have that afternoon shows on Saturdays and Sundays on Smooth FM. Smoother with Jay Smooth on Smooth. It's so smooth you can't even listen to it while you're driving because you might crash 12 to 2.
When you come back from being abducted.
Yeah.
Not abducted, sorry. Willingly boarding a spaceship.
Yep. I'll come back with my Smooth FM 12 to 2.
Such a heightened sense of what it requires to make space jazz.
I'm ready to go now. All right. Segment, where are we now? How close are we to the technology in the film? So according to Leonard David on space.com, NASA has announced that it is commissioning an independent study on unidentified aerial phenomena, UAP, as UFOs have been rebranded. The UAP study team will be led by astrophysicist David Spergel, who said, given the paucity of observations, our first task is simply to gather the most robust set of data that we can. We will be identifying that data from civilians, government, non-profits, companies, and see what that data exists, what else we should try to collect, and how to best analyze it. This news has been met with a lot of positivity, as NASA will combine scientific rigor, transparency, and a fundamental curiosity about this long-standing mystery. And that's... that was trending just a couple of days ago that NASA's very specifically and seriously now going to go through all of this data and do proper research.
Well, it's kind of like that idea that we sent a time capsule into space that has like the Beatles on there and a few other... You know, famous pieces of...
Yeah, Leonardo da Vinci's.
Yeah, white earth man's way of doing things. So, I guess it's... But there's also... I'm trying to think of what it is. I don't want to have to Google it, but I might have to. That there were the... there's like a huge, you know, one of those discs that just receives... input from outer space.
Yeah.
That got a spike.
Oh, the...
Once from a sound wave that came through.
The Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right, because the guy wrote Wow on it. That's right. So, yeah, I feel like this is not just a possibility, but it's like it has already happened.
Right.
In some sense. It's just, have we looked up from our phones long enough to be aware?
Yeah. Man. I'm totally
that
up
you
for it.
From the future is sending down space jazz.
you know, from my Smooth FM space
station. You'd be
station.
Massive in space. You would be massive in space.
I would definitely love to live on the moon and broadcast space jazz to the world.
You know what? I would want that for you too.
Thank you. Just me.
I wouldn't get to see you as much, but man, I'd be happy for you.
We'd have good Wi-Fi. We'd do a lot of Zooming.
Yeah, who am I kidding? Of course you would.
We'd be fine.
You could FaceTime from there.
Final segment, sum it up. What does this movie mean to you? To me, it's the importance of communication. That's what the film kind of means to me. It's like you meet something that's different, you communicate, you find common ground.
That's exactly it. There is,
and it's quite positive.
There is just a very lovely way of being able to break down barriers if you're willing to find the way.
Yeah.
And how usually it can be done through art and creativity.
Yeah.
Because that knows no language barrier. And I really like that at no point in this film is there any sense. It's not even put out there as a notion for someone to knock down just so we've ticked that box of... Well, how do we know that they're friendly? And, well, we should be prepared for in case, despite the fact there's all these military characters. It's all done in the name of our first thought is to just treat this as a life form, higher intelligence or otherwise, but something else is reaching out.
Yeah.
Let's just reach back.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm.
Let's get to the squid bits. We've already gone through the different types of encounters. The gentleman who came up with that, Alan Hynek, in his 1972 book, The UFO Experience, A Scientific Inquiry.
Not too much earlier than this film. That's probably where it came from. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And Hynek has a cameo in the movie as well as being a technical advisor. He's the man with a goatee smoking a pipe while wearing a powder blue suit.
He comes in right at the end.
Who pushes through the crowds of scientists to get a better look at the aliens.
He gets such a prominent moment.
Yeah.
That I had a thought of who's this character?
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, that's nice.
So there were the actors who turned it down, before I tell you the story, there were Dustin Hoffman, Al Pacino, Jack Nicholson, Gene Hackman, and James Caan all turned down the role before Dreyfuss took it.
I could see how you had Hoffman, James Caan, absolutely. And I don't know. I think Gene Hackman, just his physicality is too much for the character. I seem to picture him as a very tall man.
I could see Nicholson. Or would he be too
Nicholson's
weird?
Nicholson's too much.
Would he be too...
He doesn't do subtle.
What's going on with these goddamn aliens? Give me some more mashed potato.
he would go too heavily into the, I'm in a frenzied state.
Yeah.
That would be... I would find that unappealing.
70s Pacino would have been good.
Yeah.
Yep. So this is, but the story that I find the most interesting is young Steven Spielberg went and the person that he really wanted was Steve McQueen. And he goes and he meets
How old is Steve McQueen at this point?
He must be in his 40s, I'd say. Because I think he was 50 when he died.
Yeah, right.
And so he goes and visits McQueen. McQueen goes out on the town with him and then they're drinking and Spielberg has said, I'm just a young Jewish boy and like fucking McQueen is fucking hardcore, you know. And then at some point there's a brawl and McQueen breaks it up and Spielberg's like, did he set that up or is this really happening? He's like, I can't work out what's going on. And they hang out and then McQueen says to him, the script is great, but I can't do it. And Spielberg's like, why? And he said, as an actor, I just can't cry on cue. And Spielberg says, oh, I'll take that out. Like, I'll take that out for you. And McQueen says, no. It's a really important scene. You've got to keep it in. But I can't cry on cue, so I can't do the role for you.
And it ends up being a scene that's deleted anyway? The shower scene? Is that the one he's referring to?
I think it's because you do see him crying at the table as well.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's true.
Yeah.
Man.
But interesting, right?
I respect that.
Yeah.
Look, even to go, I just went out with Steve McQueen and saw him break up a fight that maybe he had started. You know what? That's like my Bigfoot story.
Right.
That's Steven Spielberg going, right.
Yep.
There are two options here.
Yeah.
Maybe Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
Called a bunch of people and said, we will be at this bar at this time. I need you to start a fight and then I will break it up to impress this small Jewish boy.
Or maybe he just stopped a fight.
Or maybe he just stopped a fight.
I feel like McQueen stopped a fight, but I fucking love Steve McQueen.
And he got
so
on a motorcycle and jumped over a fence.
Yeah. Have you watched The Getaway? I'd never seen The Getaway.
No.
With Ally McGraw. We'll have a chat off. It's a very good movie, but there is a scene in it that was genuinely confronting and made me feel like it's anyway, we'll talk about it. This is a whole nother conversation, but it was great. And I could see it's a Sam Peckinpah film.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the start that I was like, I reckon Steven Soderbergh likes this. There's some, you know, technique that Soderbergh has that you go, did you get it from this film? But anyway. Meryl Streep auditioned for the role of Roy's wife, but Terry Carr got it.
Terry?
Underrated.
Underrated.
Yeah.
This is her sort of in her wheelhouse. This is her epoch. She's sort of in a lot of films at this point. And watching it, like as soon as she turned up, I think I'd maybe blurred the Jillian character.
Yes.
With the Ronnie character.
Yes.
So when she turned up, I was like, oh, I don't remember her being in this.
Yeah.
And then got excited because I love her. I just love her.
Yeah, she's so good.
Mm.
She's really good in Mr. Mum.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, she could do comedy. Mm. She's great. So Terry Garr got it after Spielberg saw her in a coffee ad and loved the way that she could convey a wide range of emotions in a 30-second clip.
So is this one of her first big roles?
Must be really early.
There you go. Yeah.
Director and sometimes actor Francois Truffaut plays the role of Claude Lacombe.
Who got a big credit at the start.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what... I assumed, oh, he's very big in other countries, but we don't know him here.
Yeah, so he's a director. And his character is based on a famous UFO researcher, Jacques Vallée. In the special edition of the film, so I don't know which one you watched, but they added the scene where the missing battleship, the Kota Paxi, has suddenly appeared in the middle of the Mongolian Gobi Desert.
I had that.
So I didn't have that. That's not because I watched the original. And then I went through the Blu-ray I have has the other two in. So
I can see why that was cut.
Right.
We got the planes at the start. And then it just felt like we were backtracking.
Mm.
When at that point we had...
You either have the planes or the boat, right?
Yeah. And you got the planes at the start.
Yeah. Because
that's a wonderful... almost misdirect.
Yeah.
And then at that point, by the time we see the boat, like one of the next scenes is the Indian community who are chanting the song, or the notes, I should say. So I was a bit confused as to, is this the same? Because initially at that point that was in Mongolia.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't feel we're in Mongolia now.
Yeah.
And then it's reported on the news. Anyway, I can see why.
Yeah,
the boat just gets confusing.
Yeah,
we get it.
It takes you out of the story a little bit. So in the real world, the Cotopaxi disappeared around the Bermuda Triangle, which is the section of the Atlantic Ocean between Bermuda. Yep, Florida.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah. So the for people who don't know, the Bermuda Triangle is between Bermuda, Florida, Puerto Rico, and added to the myth. That it disappeared in that area. A scuba diver revealed that it was off the coast of St. Augustine, Florida, and it was known for decades as Bear Wreck. And then the truth was revealed that it was the Cotopaxi that had disappeared. But it was only revealed in 2020. That's interesting. The initial idea for the movie was about UFOs and shady government dealings following in the wake of the Watergate scandal. And that version of the script was called Watch the Skies. And you can still feel a bit of the DNA of that.
Yeah, but again, I like that we didn't lean too heavily into that. And very interesting at a point in history, but US history in particular.
Yeah.
That start, if it wasn't there already, of the seeds of doubt in government. Not just you're making bad calls, because that's always going to happen, because there's always been a political divide.
Yeah.
But you're making shady calls.
Yeah.
And you might not be making decisions that are politically or morally aligned with me, but
yeah.
they are, at least are with you.
Yeah.
To then sort of have that shattered as to, oh my God, the highest power that we have
yeah.
is actually doing some pretty shady stuff.
Yeah.
Who's watching The Watchmen. I'm pleased that it didn't make this into the film, because that would have been probably, pretty avant-garde at the time.
Yeah.
But it would be really dated by now.
Yeah. And,
because you've had a lot of that since.
I like this film.
I really like the idea, of it's just, what if aliens came to Earth?
And we
wouldn't try to shoot them.
And no one was an asshat.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the sheep might have another idea on it.
Sheep are furious. Taxi Driver writer Paul Schrader sent in a version called Kingdom Come that was more of a political thriller, but Spielberg and the studio rejected it. John Williams worked with Spielberg to create the five-note musical method of communication. He enlisted a mathematician to calculate the number of five-note combinations they could possibly make with a 12-note scale. That was... Do you want to take a guess of how many?
How many times they tried to work it out?
The number of how many combinations they could make
out of those notes.
Yeah.
So when the board's going haywire, it's always still using those notes.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. 120,000.
Yeah, 134,000 combinations.
What?
Yeah. And
wow.
Then Williams created 100 distinct versions, and then they whittled the combination down one by one until they got to the one they use in the film.
I'm going to say it. I like that so much more than just it sounded nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, because sometimes it's just like that hilarious scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Oh, Harrison Ford just had horrible stomach bug that day.
Yeah.
So he had to cut the scene. So it's just funny that he just pulls the gun out and shoots him.
Yeah.
Haha, that's funny. But I like the idea that, no, we toiled over this.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's iconic.
Yeah, and
it was worth it.
And it speaks to the idea behind this is, how would they communicate?
Yeah.
What notes would they choose? Well, why would they be choosing those notes?
Yeah.
You're not just being flippant about it.
Yeah. Spielberg, at one point, I was very excited when we locked this in because I had this ready for you. Spielberg at one point wanted the aliens to be non-human and gliding instead of walking. He even went as far as to design a grey spandex suit and roller skates that would, I'm going to wait for you to stop drinking, would be worn by an orangutan. And when they tried to film it, the orangutan took off the skates and walked straight over to its owner.
Oh my God.
That is so good, right?
That's fantastic.
Oh man,
to even get to that point of we're actually physically going to test this.
I was laughing so hard writing this, going,
that footage exists. You would film that to test
it. Yeah, it would be.
Oh my gosh, I need to see that so bad.
I would.
If not, I will find my own orangutan and put it on roller skates.
My self-control and not ringing you and telling you that immediately is...
But just that, how smart certain members of the ape community. Don't get me started on chimps. I just don't have any time for them.
Right.
But that an orangutan would be sitting there with a set of roller skates on and just go, fuck this for a joke.
No.
What is this?
No.
Take them off, go back to its owner and just go, can we go now?
Yeah, I've had enough.
Are they done?
Time for nine eyes.
And then it unzips its orangutan suit and it's actually an alien.
Yes. Yeah, amazing. No one saw that coming.
That's brilliant. What a tremendous idea.
Oh, I love it. The alien who bids farewell is an animatronic puppet that had a crew of 7 puppeteers working it. This puppet inspired Spielberg to wonder, what if this little guy didn't get back on the mothership?
That's how
we get to E.T.
There we go.
So that all makes sense. Spielberg and George Lucas...
What a great idea. He's too busy doing the hand signals.
Yeah.
To notice that the door goes up and
yeah.
he turns out. Right. And he's like, thank you, friend. Yeah. We have communicated through music and the gesture of hands. And looked up. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, and then you see a dart hit the back of his neck. He passes out and suddenly...
And the dog pisses on him.
Yeah, and then suddenly they're crumbing him. That's what I reckon would actually happen if aliens came.
Oh, what do they taste like?
Yeah.
It's your second question.
Yeah.
Can we have sex with it? What does it taste like?
Can you fuck it?
Can you do both. Maybe you can do both.
I want to get t-shirts made up that say, aliens, can you fuck it? Can you eat it? Oh, man. So Spielberg and George Lucas both had their movies coming out in 1977, and Lucas didn't think his film would make back its budget. So he and Spielberg had a wager that they'd give each other 2.5% of profits to each other of their respective films.
That's right. That was a little mates bet they had. That's right.
And Lucas underestimated his movie, with the difference in payouts being $40 million to Spielberg. $40 million.
What a sweet little something.
But you know what? Lucas did okay as well.
Yeah, I think they're both fine.
They're fine. Spielberg was unhappy with the film because he didn't have enough time to finish it. And Columbia Pictures, who were going through tough financial troubles, insisted he have it ready for 1977. 3 years later, they allowed Spielberg to finish the movie under one condition. He had to show the inside of the mothership to give the studio's marketing department an angle to sell this new version. Spielberg capitulated, added new scenes and cutting others to make the special edition. He was unhappy with that scene, though, and later cut it for the collector's edition home video release.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware that either of those had happened.
So there's a scene where you go right inside the ship and you see all around.
You don't need that.
I
can see how there is a world where a modern day way of thinking would say we see the ship.
Yeah.
We see the aliens. Well, we want to see in the ship.
Yeah.
And that would be like, well, that's for the next film.
Yeah.
You know, this film, they come down, humans go on board, next film we see what happens next. So I understand why they would feel that they need the all the way in.
Mm.
But I like the idea that there's a good film should have you, not with questions you need answered, but leave you with enough to then feed yourself as to what you think happens next.
Yeah. I think so too.
And seeing inside, I think, ruins that. Again, that's why I don't think I needed to completely see what one of these aliens looks like.
Yeah. I went and checked out that scene after I'd watched the movie and done all the research, and then I went back and I checked out all these scenes, and none of them, you know, there's good things added, like, you know, when Roy sees, you know, the first encounter, Spielberg's added a shadow going over. So when he leans out of the car to look up, there's a shadow going over his face of the UFO. And so that's a nice addition.
Yeah, sure.
But stuff like that is...
There was a few elements to the version I saw that had me thinking, I wonder if there's been added elements like that.
Yeah.
A few shadows and effects like that possibly weren't there first time round.
Yeah.
Only because I questioned how they would have done those.
Yeah.
But it didn't take away from anything.
No. That was Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed, as a military man sending Roy on his way. You know, when he turns up? Yeah, that's Carl Weathers.
Now I need to go see that again.
Yeah. The moment that the giant globe rolls away seems to predict the opening scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
Just the idea that I think it was like the head controller, whatever the term was, just like, oh, he's got a globe in his office.
Yeah.
Again, another use of, well, we can't just type into a computer.
Yeah.
Just a really great old school way, you know, of just going full analog. Let's kick open a door.
Yeah.
Let's not even lift this thing. Let's just work out how we can unscrew it.
Yeah.
Do you want to just do the coordinates here with this globe in the stand? What? And not roll it down a corridor?
Yeah.
Are you crazy?
Yeah. And the final squid bit is, I don't know if you know this, but that little boy grew up to be Michael Chamberlain. I don't know why. I just kept thinking of Chambo all the way through the film.
Oh, he's got the eyes.
He's definitely got the
still
eyes.
Still fits that Boston University top too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would believe that Chambo has been to Boston University.
Yeah, I definitely believe that Chambo would just wander out into a farm chasing after a UFO as well. And come back and be kind of nonplussed.
Yeah, and his parents too would be just like, can you just not run into the pine forest again after extraterrestrial life forms?
Giggling
please?
Like a madman. Anyway.
Who's going to clean up this mess in the room? Which, incidentally, why would any parent, like, when did anyone ever genuinely buy that terrifying monkey with the symbols doll for their kids?
Oh, yeah.
One of the first things you see is that one, that always horror film trope, monkey, wind-up monkey doll that plays the cymbals and its eyes poke out. That is the scariest thing to put in any kid's room, even in 1977.
Well, so is that little cymbal-bashing monkey only scary now the same way, like, my mum doesn't have a fear of clowns because clowns were hilarious and fun and entertaining.
Sure.
And then John Wayne Gacy and Stephen King ruined
He ruined a lot of things for people. Just nice artwork.
Yeah, and my ability to enjoy Rio Brown. Sorry. Trying to think of a John Wayne movie.
Rio Grande. Maybe. Is that the one?
Man, that guy's got a lot to answer for.
He so does.
I can't even enjoy a good old Western anymore.
Without seeing a Harlequin clown face.
Yeah. But I wonder if they were fine and then subsequently they've ruined the zeitgeist.
Look, I was having this conversation with someone the other day. If you've ever Googled what the Disney characters, Mickey Mouse in particular, looked like when Disneyland opened in 1955.
Right.
The stuff of nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sure, I can see why the cymbal banging monkey with its eyes bugging out
was fine.
Was fine. And then someone at some point went, you know what is terrifying? That toy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I'll let it slide.
Rove, what do you have coming up? Is there anything, like, I know you've got projects, but is there anything you can actually talk about?
I've got a wonderful gig coming up with you in Adelaide that I'm immensely looking forward to.
16th of September.
And then other things that... No, I literally have a meeting tomorrow about something that may or may not happen.
So we'll talk about that at some other
point. I look forward to talking about that.
Do you know what you're going to talk about in Adelaide?
No, you have sent around a message for something for us to bring, just an idea for us to bring.
Yeah.
And I'm still struggling with it, and everyone else I've talked about has just immediately gone, oh, I knew exactly what I was going to talk about.
Oh, really?
That's my Mickey D impression.
Oh, right.
So I still have to feel like I need to crack that nut.
Yeah.
In a satisfying way.
Yeah.
But I'm excited. I'm just excited. It's going to be a fun lineup that will probably go for 8 straight hours.
Well, it's so funny. So... Craig Egan was like, how long is this going? I put it down as going for 2.5.
He knows
I said,
better
mate,
than to ask that question.
I said, you've got to put 7 to 11. I said, we're going to bang out an hour of stand-up at the start, and that's going to blow out.
Yeah.
So, you know.
He knows what he's in for.
Right.
Anyone who goes to this knows what they're in for, and that's why you need to get a ticket to this.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be...
It's going to be one that you do not want to miss.
And I have a feeling, like, so far on the bill, and the key part of that sentence is so far, is you, Will, Gleason, Georgia Mooney,
yes,
Limo, Mickey D, Ben Elwood making his debut appearance in Adelaide, which is hilarious, and Adam Richard.
Yeah.
And
you, by the way, as
oh,
well.
Yes.
Let's and, not forget that doesn't add to the mix.
And there's also a super special guest that I'm not sure that I've even told you about. Have I? There's someone very special. We've got sponsorship.
Oh, magnificent.
And when I say sponsorship, I say that in quotation marks. But anyway.
So that's all I want to plug at the moment.
Yeah.
There's nothing else that interests me right now on the horizon except that.
That's enough.
And my theatre sports medal around my neck.
You have to wear the theatre sports medal.
I will.
Yes.
I absolutely will.
Keep bringing it up in conversation for the whole night. Thank you, Rove.
My dog also has a gas mask.
Thank you to Rove McManus for helping me dig into this brilliant film. Ben will be back in a couple of weeks with our next Space Podyssey, which is 1984. We've already recorded that one, and interesting chat. Very interesting chat. Many thoughts on the film, many thoughts that come out of the film. So keep an eye and ear out for that in the next couple of weeks. Next week, we will have a brand new Chitter Chatter with Bride and Coverdale. That will drop on Monday morning. They're the little mini episodes that are designed to kickstart your week. And then my guests will be the Total Reboot boys, Cam and Alexi, as we discuss their new YouTube series, Finding Yeezus. And I have an interview with Hollywood director Nick Stoller about his new film, Bros. I went and saw that last Wednesday, and I thought it was really funny. I thought it was a really funny film, and, you know, comedy is in a weird place at the moment, but it had a lot of jokes, and it was fun to see a mainstream rom-com about two gay men. Anyway, we'll talk about that next week. We also have the latest Beautiful Tales for The Disenchanted. My producer on that, Sean Allen, has put the finishing touches on it. It sounds great. It's a hell of a story too. I think it's really come together nicely. So I'm looking forward to presenting a new one of those for you too. So that's all coming up. Let's finish today with a quote from Carl Sagan. It is pointless to worry about the possible malevolent intentions of an advanced civilization with whom we might make contact. It is more likely that the mere fact they have survived so long means they have learned to live with themselves and others. Perhaps our fears about extraterrestrial contact are merely a projection of our own backwardness, an expression of our guilty conscience about our past history, the ravages that have been visited on civilizations only slightly more backward than we. Until then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.